All right, man. I have been following you personally for probably a couple of weeks now. I know for me, I just got into the game right after college as a real estate investor. I'm looking to get my first property, and I'm like, man, I need to start meeting these people who know real estate, who actually know how to do this stuff. And I stumbled upon Eventbrite. I found one of your events, which is crazy because you were actually an attendee at one of these real estate events, and now you're hosting it.
Correct.
And Hone, I mean, thank you so much for joining the program, man. It's amazing to have you.
Not a problem, Sean. I've been an investor for about 9 years, and I started off just like how everybody else does. They go to meetings, they try to learn more, they figure out what strategies to do, because you hear it all the time, like no money, no credit, no problem. You can become an investor. But then
Right.
people get stuck, like, how? What do you mean you can do no money, no credit? And by going to these seminars, it's true. You can actually invest that way. It's just that most people don't know how. And it's because your family has never taught you how to do that. Your teachers have never taught you how to do that. College doesn't teach you how to do that. So you have to go to these seminars. So yeah, I was going to these seminars, and it was because of these seminars, these different types of seminars, that I did learn the strategies. And there's a popular strategy today called the BRRRR strategy. It's where you buy, renovate, rent, refinance, and then repeat. And I learned that strategy way back before it even had a name, but that completely changed my life. When I first wanted to become an investor, I would think that I needed 20% down, 30% down.
Right,
And if,
yeah.
yeah, right.
Same
And
for
if you
me.
do, yeah. And if you do the math, you're like, okay, I'm going to put this much money down, and then I'm going to collect this much rent. And based off of that rent, I'm going to have X amount of cash flow left over. And then I got to pay myself back. And then the break even was like 8 to 10 years. And I was like, this doesn't make any
It doesn't make
sense.
any sense at all.
This
It's a
can't be
waste of
right.
time, man.
Yeah, it's a waste of it. Yeah, correct. So I did nothing. I paused. I was like, hold on. Because this is before seminars. I just was like, okay, I just need to put a down payment, buy a property, I'm good.
Okay.
And the reason I wanted to do that is because of Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I'm not sure if you've read the book. Yeah.
For sure. Robert Kiyosaki. Yeah, one of the best in the business. That's how I got involved. That's how a lot of people got
A
involved in
lot
real
of people,
estate.
right? They call it the purple pill because
Yeah.
the book's purple, right?
Yeah.
So
It's a
yeah,
good, yeah.
so Robert Kiyosaki, he is the person who got a lot of people started. And this whole idea of collecting enough passive income to pay for your expenses and then you can retire, that really, really resonated with me. And in that book, it's all about real estate. So I was like, okay, buy a property, right? That's pretty simple. Buy a property. And how do you buy a property? Oh, of course, you got to put money down and all that kind of stuff. And then when you do the math, 8 to 10 year break even does not make sense to me. So that's where I put things on pause for 2 years. I would tell people, hey, I'm a real estate investor. I'm a real estate investor. But I didn't have any properties, right? So I just kept
Anyone can
renting.
really say, I say I'm a real estate investor. I don't have any properties yet.
Right, exactly.
So
And I
it's,
did that for 2 years.
yeah.
I did that for 2 years. And then I kept going to seminars. And then one seminar I went to completely changed my life because he was a local real estate investor who just happened to be teaching his own little private seminars.
Oh.
And he doesn't do it anymore, but I was lucky to have caught him in when he was doing these seminars. So he taught me the strategies, and he also was kind of like a mentor to me once the seminars were over. I think that's the one thing that people don't realize is how much support you need after the seminar is over.
Yeah, it's like any, if you go to a math tutor and you have him, kind of, let's just say this. Let's say you're like, I was in college, 5 months ago. Let's say I'm in some psychology class, right? I have, someone lecturing at me, kind of like how we're doing at these seminars. But if I have extra time after where I can really say, hey, I had a couple questions that I didn't really understand. Can you go over that a little bit? And it's the same mentality of, yeah, you have the base principle of the teaching, and then you really, for me at least, because hand raised, I have ADHD, like, we could be talking right here and I'm gonna forget this whole conversation. You know what I mean? That's just me. But I needed that extra time. Like a lot of people need that extra time to really conceptualize and build that strategy and base foundation, because I know for me, I have, of course, for you too, a lot of people have these very luxurious goals, grandiose goals. And that's great. But I feel like I want to learn the basics, be a sponge and absorb as much as possible, and then transition, start small and then go big.
Yeah. Well, they say you got to make your mistakes, make small mistakes and keep making them. And I think that's good advice, because you can make big mistakes. And if you make a big mistake, that could knock you out of the game for a very long time. So make small mistakes, do small deals, and then grow from there. Some of the things that keep people back, again, were the no money, no credit thing. And my solution to that for most people is you just have to learn how to work out the finances. And when I say that, you have to think creatively. Yes, you can do 20% down, 30% down. But if you didn't have that, what else could you do? Now, some people are like, oh, well, I guess I can do like a 3.5% down mortgage and buy a multi-unit, live in one of the units, and then rent out the others. And yes, you can, but you can only do that once a year. So then if you're trying to buy multiple properties, then what, right? What if you're trying to buy 10 properties this year? You can't use that strategy over and over.
Yeah, right? You're done.
Right? So you're done. So you have to learn other strategies. So the other strategies could be seller financing, subject to lease options. You can raise private money. You can leverage hard money. So these creative strategies that I just mentioned, I mean, handful, they're only a couple of words, but they are super powerful once you learn actually how to use those things, because that opens up all of your financial abilities, because you're limited to what your brain can comprehend and what your brain believes. If your brain believes like, oh, you need a lot of money and you don't have a lot of money, you're done. You're stuck. But if you start learning about these other strategies, all of a sudden you're like, oh, I can do this. I can do that. I can do this. I can do that. And that's what's important. So a deal came across my desk the other day.
Very nice.
Yeah. And that came by because I'm constantly putting myself out there. I'm constantly telling people that I'm a real estate investor. And then they're like, oh, well, my neighbor is selling a property, or my friend's selling a property, or whoever. Right. And so
there you go. Love that.
Be the person that gets the phone calls. So think about, like, just take a second to reflect. How do I become that person that everybody wants to call when a deal comes up? If you can figure out that in your own life, that'll change your life completely. So step one, figure out how to become the magnet to all of the leads. Okay. So you get all of the leads first. Step two, though, is how do you close on all of these things? If you have X dollars in your pocket or your bank account, that's only going to go so far. So how do you leverage more money? So most people just think, okay, I have the money in my bank account, and then I can go get a mortgage from the bank. So they have two options.
Yeah.
So what's the third option? What's the fourth option? What's the fifth? What's the sixth? What's the seventh? Most people stop at the two.
Yeah, because that's where what they only know, right? Yeah.
That's the only thing that they know, and that's the problem. That's the problem. So the one that came by my desk, the guy, he wanted to just sell it really quick. Unique situation, but let's just put it this way. He wanted to sell it and not walk away with anything. He didn't care to make a penny, right? So he's just like, look, I don't want it. I'm like, okay. And he had a mortgage on the property. And so I said, okay, well, here, we'll do this. I'll buy it as soon as possible. And the fastest way for me to buy this property is if I take it over subject to your existing mortgage, meaning I will just continue to pay your mortgage on your behalf until I'm able to refinance later. And what that means is if he had, say, a mortgage for $100,000 and he was selling the house for $100,000, I come to the table with no money. I don't even have to bring the $100,000 to pay off the existing mortgage. I am keeping that on. I am buying the property subject to the existing mortgage.
Okay, that makes sense.
And then every single month, he has a monthly mortgage payment. Maybe it's $700 a month. I'm just making it up.
Whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. So that $700 then goes towards, so now I have to pay it. The loan is still in his name. The deed is in my name. Okay. So I own the property. The lien, the debt is in his name. I'm paying it on his behalf. So I'm not taking over his mortgage. Okay. So two different docs, his name, my name. We keep it that way. I am now able to own the property. And now because I own the property, I feel comfortable to do the rehab to the property.
For sure.
So I can start fixing it up I can rent it out. I can do whatever it is that you're allowed to do when you own a property.
Yeah.
So now I own the property. He still owns the debt. I pay his monthly payments. And then when I am ready, I refinance the property. I go to the bank and I say, hey, bank, I got this property. It's worth X. It has $100,000 in of debt on it. Pay that off. And then so the new bank, my bank, will say, no problem, Hone. And then they give we do a mortgage, pay off the existing mortgage. Now it's out of his name, and now everything is in my name. So okay. His objective is done. He got rid of the house, and he didn't pay any more money.
And that's beautiful. So then you said it's 2 years, or it's however long you can pay off the mortgage then.
It's whatever it is that I choose. I can refinance. If I can refinance in 1 day after I buy the property, then so be it. Or I can run it as long as I want.
Because I feel like refinancing is such a broad term. Like for me, if I was specifically for that deal, what would I need to have in, whether that be just, you know, liquidated assets, I guess like it's just a personal like lender or something like that. Like what would you say that would put you in like in an optimal place to say, okay, I want to refinance it?
Okay. So we got to take this all the way back. So if this is your first time ever hearing about the term of refinancing an investment property, what the banks look for is that they want to see that the property can support itself, meaning you're going to collect, let's say, $1,500 a month in rent, right? So $1,500 a month comes in. Some money goes out in expenses. Let's call it taxes, insurance, management, maintenance, vacancy, and utilities, right? So you got six different things where of the $1,500, money's going back out. So let's say it's $500 goes out, just to make the math easy. Okay, so $500 goes towards paying taxes, insurance, utilities, maintenance, management, and vacancy. So that's $500. So you're left with $1,000 net operating income, right? So that's how you calculate your NOI, net operating income. Mm-hmm. So we have $1,000. Now, I'm going to go to the bank and I'm going to say, hey, bank, I need you to give me financing for this deal. And then the bank goes, okay. They do an appraisal. They see how much the building's worth. They're going to be willing to give me a portion of what it's worth. So, you know, when you buy a property and you put 20% down,
sure.
That's because the bank is bringing 80%. Mm-hmm. That's called your 80% loan to value. This is the same thing, just backwards. Same exact thing, just backwards. So let's pretend like the bank was doing the same thing, 80% loan to value. If the property's worth 100, let's say the property's worth 100, they say, Hone, we're willing to give you 80%, $80,000, right? But because I already own the property, I don't have to bring 20%.
Yeah.
I already own it. They're just bringing me the same exact money that they would have brought if I was buying the property.
Yeah.
So you got to know what their loan to value is, right? So the loan to value will dictate how much money you can borrow based on the value of the property. So I'm going to get a loan. I'm going to get a loan from the bank. That loan is going to have a monthly cost to it, principal and interest. So let's say I'm borrowing $100,000. Well, that $100,000 is going to cost me $700 a month, as an example. Mm-hmm. So the bank is going to charge me $700 a month. They just want to know that my net operating income is enough to cover that and buy a good amount. And when I say good amount, they want to know that I'm at least 20% over. They don't want it like, oh, Hone, we charge $700 a month. You make $700 a month. That's like too close for comfort, right? That's
way too risky. Yeah.
Yeah. That would be what they call a debt service coverage ratio of a 1. They want to see a debt service coverage ratio of a 1.2. So they want to see 20% over at least. Some banks want 1.25. Some banks want 1.4. So you have to know the criteria of the bank, and that will dictate how much money you can borrow from them. But as long as you know what they're looking for, you can figure out whether the deal works for you or not. So it's all about knowing what your exit strategy exit strategy is all the way at the end, meaning you're like, okay, the building's worth this. That means I can borrow this. If I borrow this, it's going to cost that. And based on what I can rent it for, can I pay for that? And that's the math you got to do. And if it all works out. It's
very simple. Yeah, exactly. And it's very simple too. I mean, I know a lot of my friends who want to become real estate investors. They want to get the first property, especially right now in Philadelphia, it being a perfect time to capitalize on that. Only problem is though, they have, and on paper, they look at what they have right now. They're like, man, maybe I'm not in the best situation. You know, I, one of my best friends right now, Chris, he is going to be going to PCOM to be a PA. Very smart kid. He's working at Jefferson right now. And I actually approached him, being one of my roommates. He himself, we want to do the same thing essentially. And he told me, he's like, you know, Sean, with, you know, undergrad loans or graduate loans, I'm, you know, putting myself in a pretty, you know, nice hole here. But in terms of, you know, just collectively building yourself and, you know, to be a very reputable and appealing to gain a loan, what are some things just like as like intro level? So people like that don't know real estate at all, they can say, okay, I can work towards X to get Y in terms of a nice, you know, loan mortgage for my first property.
Well, it's everything that I just went over, but they also credit scores. Also, more importantly than credit score is what's on your credit report. So as a loan officer, because I actually am a loan officer as well. So what we look for is that in your credit report that you don't have 30, 60, or 90 day lates.
Yeah.
So do everything in your power to make sure you pay everything on time. That's the most important thing. Buy the fancy car. Just make sure you don't miss a payment is what I'm saying. Don't have a 30, 60, 90 day late.
Don't buy the fancy car if you cannot afford to make those payments in the best way possible.
Yeah. It might not even be the fancy car that screws you. It could have been a little cell phone bill for $20 that you didn't pay and they marked it 30 day late and then 90 days late or whatever. And it just wrecks you. It's not the cost of the thing. It's whether you are responsible enough to keep up with your payments. Because if you let all of those things slide and you want to borrow money from me,
that's 10x. Yeah. Good luck with that.
How are you going to treat my money? Because obviously you just demonstrated that you don't care when it's not your money.
So. Yeah. It's the equivalent of just talking with like some girl and she just like cheated on her boyfriend. It's like, well, am I going to take you out? Because I don't really trust you that you're not going to not cheat on me. You know what I mean? It's the same kind of logic and it makes total sense. And for people that are just, you know, starting off, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. I always just say be a sponge, but you got to take the risk. You know, you're not going to get any reward. You have to make calculated risks. And I like making my risk. Like when I, you know, first invested in, you know, the company that I now own, for my first car, for the podcast that I do right now, this is all investments. This is all a risk. This is all time that I'm dedicating to something that I believe in right now. Like I'm planting little seeds in right now. And of course I'm not expecting them to, you know, I'm not trying to harvest in the next 6 months. I'm trying to harvest, you know, years from now. And that's the whole thing with real estate that people get caught up in is like, oh, they want to go into like and flip a house. Flipping houses is great. I have nothing against that. I mean, I first got into houses. I forget. There's one show. There's like two brothers. They're twins. You would definitely know it if you saw it. But I forget and my first episode that I watched was them flipping a house. I was like, oh my God, they made, you know, $100,000 on a deal, $200,000. That's incredible. But as I started, you know, learning more about it, that's not obviously their net. And of course they have to split it. Of course, there's a bunch of other external factors. And the more appealing thing for me is being more long-term and not necessarily trying to just get that little quick short-term thing. Again, I know that it's appealing, but for me and as an investor, I'm more so that Warren Buffett type character where, you know, no one wants to get rich slow, right? That's his great line. Everyone wants to get rich, you know, today. No one wants to take that long methodical path down, you know, the yellow brick road, essentially.
So one of the things that I heard you mention was calculated risk. The thing is, if people often people want to skip steps in real estate. And one of the steps that they skip is getting educated. They say, oh, Hone, I don't want to go to seminars. Hone, I don't want to learn. I don't want to join any groups. I don't want to do any of that. I just want to jump in. I want to invest in real estate. I learn by doing. This is the same words I hear all the time. People think they're unique when they tell me this stuff. Hone, I learn from doing. I'm like, okay, cool. What does doing mean when you do real estate? And they have no idea, right? It's like, okay, you learn by doing. What will you be doing? Are you going to be swinging the hammers? Are you going to be turning the screwdrivers? What is doing real estate actually mean to you? And if you actually think about it, doing real estate just means doing numbers on a piece of paper. It's all it is. What's the property worth? What can I borrow? What am I going to rent it out for? What am I going to flip it for? It's just numbers.
Yeah.
But most people just want to go out and buy a property. That's the dumbest thing you can do, right? That's the dumbest thing you can do. So if you guys are listening to this and you guys are in the boat of, I don't want to join any groups, I don't want to go to any seminars, I don't want to do this, that, the other, you're just being really naive, because you're missing out on how to actually play the game. It's like, if you didn't know how to play baseball or football or soccer or whatever, and you just like, okay, I'm just going to run on the field and I learn by doing, you're an idiot. You're not going to learn these rules.
You're going to snap an ankle, right? Yeah.
Well, not even that, but you just don't know what to do.
The learning curve is so much more accelerated if you attend these seminars and
take,
you know, specific influencers like you, for me, and other people that I've had the pleasure of being a mentor. It's that learning curve that, sure, you're going to learn it eventually, but you're going to save potentially years off of your life just from learning from that mentor.
Right. And there are things you won't even know, because people are all the time, oh, Hone, I can Google, I can YouTube. Okay. Did you know to even Google or YouTube debt service coverage ratio? Have you even heard those words before? Right? Most important word combination in lending, debt service coverage ratio, you've never heard of it. So how do you Google it? How do you YouTube it? Right? So don't be like, calculated risk. Yes. But how do you know how to do the calculation if you don't know what you're talking about? Right? Yeah. So for those who are just like, oh, I just want to do. All right, good luck, because you're going to get screwed, right? You're going to get screwed. You're going to learn the hard way, and that's terrible. Why do that to yourselves? And it's really just because, like, they're cheap. Yep. They're cheap, really. Absolutely. Because to join a group, even if it costs $2,000, so what? Pay the $2,000. Go make how much money do you want to make in real estate? A dollar?
Yeah, right. You
know, everybody looks to make hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars. Mm-hmm. Yet they're not looking to invest in their knowledge, $2,000, $3,000, $5,000. Like, I'm constantly paying for education because I get it back tenfold and I make less mistakes. And then I get to network with the people who are teaching the courses. Like, you go so much further that way.
So much further. And they'll be the same people, Hone, who go in and buy the expensive dinners just because they want to get it. And they'll go out nights of drinking and just spend, you know, hundreds of dollars. And those add up to thousands. But again, they don't want to pay for that, you know, program that, again, you're not just gaining the knowledge, but you're gaining, you know, one contact here, one contact here. And then you're just starting to level up. And before you know it, you're in that upper echelon of, okay, not only do I have my financial and real estate literacy down, but I have the connections. I know the lenders. I know the officers. I know properties. I know the location. And just building that, it's like, so I don't know if you're a big mixed martial arts fan. I am. I love it. George St. Pierre.
Yep.
Are you familiar with him? So he's a great mindset, like Khabib Nurmagomedov does. And he says, in like really broken English, Khabib says, he's like, even though a black belt, I always think white belt. And that's so true, because, you know, like, I was just having this conversation with Alan Dom the other day, and I'm very fortunate to have him mentor under me. He, in the first step in our mentorship, he's like, go read Millionaire Next Door. That's what I'm reading currently right now with a couple other books. And his big philosophy was to always be growing and always be humble enough, but to always be learning. And that moment there, you just take the foot off the gas and you say, you know what? I know everything. That's it. That's when people start to just surpass you. And like I said, for me, I always want to be learning. Like you said, and it's great to hear, you know, someone who thinks the same way, you know?
Yeah. It's the white belts, right? And if you're in martial arts, you see this all of the time. It's the white belts who after class want to go out and go fight people. Right.
Yeah.
And it's the black belts who don't want to fight anybody, because they know and they realize from wisdom that the person that they might be fighting may know more than them. they have enough wisdom to realize that other people also know things. White belts, when they get started, they're like, oh, I learned how to do this punch and all that kind of stuff.
Superpower, yeah.
Yeah, and then it's like, oh, I can fight anybody. They don't yet have the wisdom. That's what we deal with when we talk. When I talk to all these brand new people who want to be investors, who aren't willing to focus or reinvest into themselves, that's what it is. It's the white belt who thinks that they can just fight anybody. They feel this invincibility because they've yet been to be hit in the face. They don't know what it feels like.
Mm-hmm. Reality is yet to set in on them. Yes.
Yeah. Right. Right. They haven't gotten their humble pie yet, as they say.
That's very true.
Yeah.
Where do you train? Do you train?
I don't train. Not formally. Informally. So
how'd you get in to MMA? You picked it up?
Oh, I'm an old dude, man. I watched UFC 1.
Really? With Hoyce Gracie, right?
Gracie, yeah. I was way back then. So
93, you know,
when that came out, me and my buddies, we just kept at it and kept fighting each other and kept learning new moves and stuff. This is way before schools and all that kind of stuff existed.
Yeah.
Like the MMA schools. So yeah.
That's wonderful, man. I train in Balance Studios out in Fishtown, their HQ. Yeah. And it's so funny. It's such a small world. I hit Phil up, one of the owners, to do like a virtual tour of their studio. And he's like, yeah, man, like we talked on the phone for like half hour. He couldn't have been like a nicer guy. He was amazing. And he's like, when are you coming to train? And I'm like, man, like I love the train. I went back to school that summer. We talked, last summer. And then, you know, obviously I'm at Penn State. I don't really have the time, blah, blah, blah. There's excuses. And then the pandemic sets in. And then I'm like, oh my God, like I have a great opportunity to go in. And so, I'm actually going to go tonight, like at 6 PM, they have jiu-jitsu. So they have Muay Thai jiu-jitsu and it's just fantastic. I mean, it's $180 per month, which is such a bargain if you really think about it, for 6 days of training, Muay Thai and jiu-jitsu. It's wonderful stuff. So I definitely recommend anybody out there who is looking to train. This is the best stuff. I mean, they learn from the Gracies, you know, That's all you got to say.
Yeah. So I'm glad you brought up, training and all that kind of stuff, because with real estate investing and with any kind of entrepreneurship, you're not doing it necessarily for the money. You're doing it for the things that you can do with the money. That's what's most important. People often forget that. They just do things for money. They forget about lifestyle. And with me, I'm a very big mountain bike enthusiast.
I saw on your Instagram. Yeah. You make all those cool videos. I love that, man.
Yeah. Yeah. So with that, it's, I don't want to forget what the main purpose of all of this hard work and training and learning and studying and all of that's for. It's so that we can actually live the life that we want. And for all of your listeners, I want you guys to remember this. We're not doing it for the money. We're not doing it for the fame and fortune. We're doing it so that we can live the life that we want. Don't just do it so that you can buy fancy things and put them on Instagram necessarily, but do it because you actually love the thing. Don't just buy an expensive car to show off the car. Do it because you love that particular car, right? So there's an internal and external. And this is one of the trainings that I paid for, where I learned all about intrinsic versus extrinsic motivation. So don't just do things because you're going to get external validation. So I buy a Ferrari and I'm like, yo, Sean, look at my Ferrari. And you're like, wow, dude, that's a cool Ferrari. And then I'm like, oh, I feel good, right? It should have nothing to do with how you feel about my Ferrari. I should be happy about the Ferrari because I bought it because I love Italian engineering. I love how their horsepower to liters in their engine ratios, whatever, right? I love the suspension. I love the details, the intricacies, the art, the beauty, but I love it. And it has nothing to do with you. So with real estate, with entrepreneurship, yes, you can get paid a lot of money. But with that money, it allows you to do things for yourself. But make sure you do it for yourself. Otherwise, you fall into the trap of this external validation. A lot of celebrities fall into this trap where they do things for that external validation. And then when they don't get it, they feel depressed. And when they feel depressed, they take drugs. And then this is where you see their life spirals out of control.
Yep.
It's all because they're externally motivated. So do it internally. And then this way, you're sure that every action you take is for yourself. But this is one of those like wisdom things. It's like, you're going to find out once you start making the money, you're going to be pulled in different directions. Do I want to buy this thing? Do I want to buy that thing? Do I want to go on this trip? Do I want to go on that trip? And then if the answer is yes, why? Why do you want to do that? And sometimes you might find it's because of the external.
And that's, if you guys are, that's the biggest thing, if you could take from this podcast, other than the great real estate value you provided, is that paragraph right there. That is so valuable. And I can actually tell you a story about my, I guess you'd call greediness, or my, you know, I was just so fixated on that dollar sign, right? So when I graduated high school, Roman Catholic, Broadenbein, great high school, I was like, what do I do? Well, I have no idea. I'm, you know, pretty decent at math. I'm, you know, okay in art. Like, I had a bunch of different things that I could really pursue, right? So my stepbrother at the time got a full ride to Alabama for engineering, okay? To date, he's actually currently still in the master's program as we speak in the aerospace program in Alabama. Shout out to Liam. And I saw the starting salary and I was like, this is the highest starting salary that I could get out of college. Why wouldn't I pursue this? Why wouldn't I want to make the largest starting salary out of college? Fast forward to my first semester when I actually took engineering classes. I was taking Math 140, which is like, it's just calculus. It's pretty just basic calculus. And I was also taking a couple of design classes, a couple material classes. And I got to be honest, I really hated every single one. And I was like, man, you know, and I was weighing the pros and cons. I was like, big pro, lots of money, con, I hate what I do. And then I'm start reading all these books from Tony Robbins, Gary V, all these other people. They're like, no, dude, it's opposite. You want to do what you love and then worry about the money later. And once I started to really wrap my head around that, I was like, oh, it's what I love is first, not necessarily you want to, because sure, you want to chase dollar signs, but it's you. What can you buy with that? Can you buy this experience that you've always dreamed of? You were talking about in the for like to buy a Ferrari. If that's what you love, if Italian engineering or BMW, if German engineering is truly what you really love, then why wouldn't you pursue that? And that's what I found digital marketing. And then what I found and stumbled upon real estate, it was the exact same feeling. It wasn't, I never thought when I wanted to become a real estate investor that I was going to make all this money and I was going to be very popular. People were going to know me. I could care less how many views this podcast gets, how many, you know, I mean, obviously I care about the amount of deals I get. I got to keep the business running, but you get what I'm saying is I just do this because I love it. It's therapy for me, you know, to have a connection with you, to have a connection with all these wonderful people. That's really what I'm about. I'm not about to like, you know, oh, this person's like X amount of followers. I'm definitely going to like DM him and like, you know, hop, tell him to get on my podcast or her to get on my podcast. Cause then I can like elevate it. Sure. There's some of that. Of course we need to think about growth, but that's not the core value. The core value is just having a decent conversation with a decent person and just trying to spread good and value. And I think a lot more people could learn from me and my failure because that's just really, I looked at the world in a certain light and that's just not how you should look at it. You should look at it from, you know, do what you love first and money's going to come.
Right. Funny enough is I got an engineering degree. So I went to college for engineering.
Really?
Yeah.
What kind of engineering?
Mechanical engineering.
That's what I was going to do. Sorry, I was talking crap on engineering. But
okay. I'm not an engineer today.
Yeah.
So yeah, I got the engineering job and all that good stuff. And then my boss threatened me. He said, Hone, if you keep working hard, one day you're going to have this job. And I was like, whoa, I do not want that job, right? Because that threat was very scary because I looked at his lifestyle. And this is what I was talking about earlier. Lifestyle. This is your ticket to having the lifestyle that you want. I looked at his lifestyle and I did not admire it, right? Sure, maybe he was making more money than me. I mean, I'm pretty sure he was making more money than me. But his lifestyle did not reflect one that I wanted. And again, it's not about the money, folks. It's about the lifestyle. So make sure that you have the lifestyle that you want to live. Otherwise, you missed the whole entire point.
Yeah.
And you can't do this one over. You can't do life over.
No. It doesn't matter what kind of religion you think. This is, I mean, I don't know. It's done. In my book, it's done.
Right. In my book too, it's done. Once you do life and you're at the end, that's it.
Maybe we were like all reincarnated into a strawberry.
Maybe who knows, right? In the next life, we're a strawberry, but we don't have to choose careers and stuff, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. Whereas here, we're choosing careers. So make sure you pick the right thing, you know, do the right things, buy things because you love them, not because somebody else makes you feel like you're important because you now own this thing, right? So That's the message. Now, in terms of real estate investing, there's so much to learn, but here's what's cool. Once you learn it, you can do all kinds of stuff. You'll be able to say yes to more deals, right? In the beginning of this podcast, I said, step one, become the magnet where people know to call you anytime there's a deal, right? And then when those deals come your way, you need to know how to actually close on those things. So how do you learn that? Joining a group, going to seminars, reading books, doing all of those things, and keep on doing them because you're going to learn a new strategy you never heard about. And then at first, you're going to be looking at the amount of money it makes, but eventually you're going to learn how to do the tax benefits, how you're going to decrease your taxes. And that's what's the most important thing, right? Or soon that you'll realize that that's just as important as how much money it makes. But most people don't realize that until much, much later in the game. They only 100% focus on how much money it makes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They're very short term minded for sure.
Yeah.
So if someone wants to attend your webinar, to attend your platform, I know you're going to be speaking, you know, in stadiums pretty soon. I definitely believe it. How can they find you? How can they get in contact with you?
Yeah, they can find me a couple of different ways. One way that they can find me, Instagram. I escaped my 9 to 5.
I love that handle. Yeah. I love that so much.
I escaped my 9 to 5. You can also email me right now at hone@honesloans.com. That's hone@honesloans.com, hone@honesloans.com, or you can do hone@iescapemy9to5.com.
So beautiful.
Reach
awesome,
out to
man.
Me guys. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Hone, this was fantastic, man. I mean, it was really good to sit down and talk with you, not even about like real estate, but just in life in general.
Right.
I definitely want to have, you know, a couple beers with you or coffee or whatever, you know, once this pandemic goes, or we can go right now. I don't even care. It's up to you, but yeah, we'll definitely be in touch, man. But thank you for all the value you provided, and I can't wait to see what you come up next in the future.
All right, Sean. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely, bro. Talk soon, all right?
See you.